saying, gee, I want to blend this medical healthcare provider role with yoga.
You better walk out of it because I beat you.
Okay.
Yay.
How's that?
Good.
All right, very good. So we're going to be very informal today. I put all these really challenging Sanskrit words up here for us to go through, but I just wanted to kind of let you know a little bit, yeah, that's good, that's better. A little bit more about me and kind of what I've done. I worked over 10 years kind of straddling the border between Colorado and New Mexico. And my first way that I was able to blend yoga into occupational therapy was with children on an Apache reservation in special ed. And I wound up creating a program of yoga for children with special needs that I published and was very successful with that. I've also worked actually billing Medicare for yoga therapy. Doctors knew what I was doing and insurance paid for it, and that was a beautiful thing. And my husband Paul and I were two of your newest members here, I think, along with Linda and Danny. We all kind of joined up last month. We came to Franklin from southern New Mexico. My aunt and uncle were living in Asheville. They had no children of their own. They were nearing 90, and they really needed some help. And so we kind of got to Franklin just in time. It turned out to be harder to get to Asheville than we expected, but sure enough, my Uncle Tom did pass, and we were able to rescue my Aunt Patricia from a nursing home and bring her here. So we are living in Franklin with my 85-year-old mother and my 94-year-old auntie. And so we're just kind of starting to put down roots. We bought our house, and I did spend a year working for Mission Care Partners doing home health. Full-time was a little more than what I wanted, and so I kind of backtracked a little bit, and I'm now working 2 days a week for Harris Home Health. So that's occupational therapy. The occupation is really anything that needs to occupy your time, something you need to do, something you want to do, something you have to do. It can be work, it can be volunteer work, it can be recreation, and the big one is self-care. So what I'm trying to do today is a fresh look at self-care from the perspective of yoga, and what does that mean? Because when we look at health insurance, self-care is with a little S, and they really only want to pay us to make sure everyone can take a shower and get dressed and stuff like that. So my argument is that healthcare can and needs to address capital S, self-care. So I'm going to kind of lay out how that ancient tradition of yoga can support that kind of an approach. And so the writings of Patanjali are dated somewhere between 4 to 6,000 years ago. Yoga was an oral tradition in India for thousands of years, and the person or people that are called Patanjali is unclear if it's one person or several. But that entity was the first one to kind of codify yoga and get it written down. This is one translation of many that I have held dear to my heart for a lot of years. There are 196 aphorisms in this book. An aphorism is a tiny little thought, short sentences. And each one is like a picture that paints 1,000 words. And so there are lots of commentaries. I'm using How to Know God, which is a translation by Christopher Isherwood, and he's an English writer from long time ago. So anybody know what yoga is? Anybody want to take a stab at it? Barbara?
For me, the way I understand it, mm-hmm. It is the development of specific sacred geometric positions that integrate the mind and the body with God.
Nice. Okay, very good. Another one. Someone have?
Basically, I thought it was just a meant to be very basic, just a, I'm going to say a path.
Okay. Definitely is a path. Corey?
Yoga basically is to unite with God. And it can be through many different vehicles. It can be through work or action or love, emotion. It can be through sacrifice, through exercise and breathing.
Beautiful. Many types of yoga. And so the root of the word yoga basically means to yoke. They sometimes refer to yoking an ox to the plow, union with God, union with self, big self, community, light. So anybody else want to throw one in the hat? Morning, welcome. So yoga chitta vritti nirodha. This is Patanjali's definition of yoga. It's the second sutra in the book. The first sutra simply says, the study of yoga begins now. That's number one. And that's kind of obvious, like, okay, yeah, that's the first sutra, it begins now. But what they say he's also telling us is, it's always right now. You know, there's no tomorrow. So right now is when we practice, right? Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha tells us that yoga is the stilling or the quieting of the fluctuations of the mind. And sometimes we need to go through the body to achieve that, or through song, or through prayer, or through meditation. Ultimately, the practice of yoga in the body, those geometric shapes and positions, the exercises, the breathing, they are all to get us toward the quieting or the stilling of the mind for meditation. That's the ultimate purpose. Everything else is a tool to kind of get us there. Because we're talking about self-care, too, I wanted to make sure and give you all several examples of how you can weave yoga into your life without needing a yoga class, without needing a lot of tools and materials or time, even. I'm all about, you know what, clock time is precious. You know, I used to get up at 5 o'clock. I used to do 2 hours every day. Not so much anymore. I find that I can get a lot of benefit from not that much clock time. Okay? So, one thing that I wanted to bring up before we get into more of Patanjali's yoga practice is the second one, Vitarka Bhavane Pratipaksha Bhavanam. And what this is telling us is advice, direct advice about how to heal your mind. The commentary on this one says, when you notice that your mind is troubled, when you are disturbed by negative thoughts or troublesome thoughts, what do you do with that? What do you do? His answer is very simple. Choose the opposite. Okay, so the first thing is the awareness. Oh my gosh, my mind is troubled. And then psychologists in the Western world teach us, what are the thoughts behind that feeling? What are you thinking? Like, oh, this is so hard. Oh, I really don't like this. Oh, I can never do this or that. So if you can discover what the thoughts are, then the practice is to choose the opposite. Okay? I may be scared, and I have courage. I may not know this, but I can do it. Those types of things. Just kind of reach for the opposite. So that's a real quick kind of fix for some of those burdensome thoughts that come up. Okay. The next one also is a mouthful. I just realized I jumped ahead of myself just a little bit. I wanted to bring your attention to the colored index cards to teach you what Patanjali says about developing a yoga practice. And you can see that asana, the pink card on the left, posture, that's considered the first step because we need to get comfortable in the body before we can really sit for meditation. So asana means posture, and I'll come back to that. Once you're comfortable in the body, then you can work with the breathing practices, and that's pranayama, which is called breath control. But it's important to remember that prana means energy. Prana is like chi, like you've heard Tai Chi and Qi Gong. Prana is that life force. And so really it's the tapping in and the regulation of that life force through the breath. in a comfortable body. And then we move on. Pratyahara. That means withdrawing your senses from the external world, particularly vision. If, you know, we're often, there's something so unique about vision. We're always kind of looking out and kind of grabbing things and pulling them in. So we often close the eyes or we soften the eyes. And we bring that sense of vision internally. We definitely do the same with sound. Ears don't reach out as much as eyes do. If you compare vision to hearing, it's a little easier to settle in and listen to your breath. Okay, so it's that sort of a withdrawing internally as pratyahara. The next step is over here. Dharana is concentration. So we need to develop concentration in order to meditate. Very often we are given or we choose an object of concentration. It might be a mantra or a word. Love was perfect. Peace. It doesn't have to be an ancient foreign language. It can be English, something that's meaningful to you. It may be looking at the flame of a candle. It may be your breath. So an object of concentration is part of dharana, and that leads you to dhyana, which is the meditation. So see how far we've already come before we even get to the stilling and quieting of the mind, particularly in these days, in this century, takes a little bit of effort. But it pays off with samadhi. That's your complete absorption. This is the Sanskrit word that's parallel to nirvana in Buddhism. Bliss out, total absorption, and ultimate reality. So this sequence is big in terms of a lifetime. It's also present within each and every single yoga class. So it's a microcosm and a macrocosm. I don't want to get any more ahead of myself, but I want to let you know that Paul and I, it's my husband Paul, have quite a bit of experience facilitating meditation groups, and we have lived in a lot of different places where the common trend really is to charge money to come and meditate as a group. And he and I share a strong belief that no one should ever have to pay to meditate. And so we would like to offer for you and facilitate a weekly meditation group for anybody that might be interested. And I can talk more about that because that's another, you know, probably Wednesdays starting in January, and I can tell you what and when. But free of charge, if we can use the fellowship hall, because that's what we believe, and we would like to offer that.
Well, we did that before with Richard. He's just not here anymore.
Oh, okay.
Sounds like we're doing it again.
Yes, and I would like to describe some of how we would facilitate that when we make sure that we have time. I am watching the clock for us this morning. So just keep that in mind, and if you want to give me your name and number or emails or what have you, we're committed to doing that with some instruction. So on the third one down here in blue, Tapa Swadhyaya Ishvara Pradidhara Kriya Yoga. Another mouthful, right? You can see how we start getting bigger. It's just the fluctuation of the mind. We need to calm that down. Okay, if you're troubled, look for the opposite. Now, Patanjali tells us, yoga has three parts. Swa means self. Anytime you see SVA, it's self. And jaya is a practice, self-study. So there are three parts to yoga. Self-discipline, study and train. Self-inquiry, go inside, reflect, process. See what works for you. See to what are you predisposed. Make those choices for yourself. There's no cookie-cutter approach. And then the third one, the third primary aspect of yoga. Anybody want to take a... What have I not thrown in there yet?
Just be.
Just be. And a lot of you already spoke to this when you gave out your definitions. Devotion. Oh. Devotion to God. Devotion to the creative force. The prana. So it's this commitment to, yes, I'm going to study, I'm going to train, I'm going to practice. Yes, I'm going to go inside. I'm going to learn about myself in this world. And I'm going to practice devotion to whatever that creative force is in my life. And I'm going to come back to that. So back to the pink cards. We're talking about asana. This is probably, this green one here is only three words. Sthira sukham asanam. Sthira sukham asanam. All that says is the posture should be comfortable. The posture should be steady and motionless. He's talking about sitting, seated meditation. If the hips are tight, we need to do some poses to loosen up the hips so I can sit. If my back isn't strong, I need to do some poses to strengthen my back so I can sit. But there are many, many ways to sit. Different positions of the legs, different supports underneath me. A chair is fine. The floor is fine. The only real rule on that, according to Patanjali and yoga, is that we need the spine to be erect. We need everything from the hips through to the head to kind of be not in a straight line, because you want the natural curves of your spine to be there. And so you need the right support underneath you and able to sit comfortably. Okay. So even in sun salutations or a yoga flow or any of those poses, it is not about huge effort, in my opinion. We are not talking about a workout. We are not talking about no pain, no gain. We are talking about muscle efficiency, energy efficiency, and conservation of energy and directing it without injury. Very, very important to realize that the posture needs to be comfortable. So the basic is sitting. We can practice that in standing, and we can practice it lying down. Y'all have seen the final relaxation pose in yoga, Shavasana. One of my yoga teachers says that's the most difficult one. Lie there, eyes closed, don't move, don't talk, don't make a sound. And I was able to teach that to five-year-olds. Right? It works. Okay. So I kind of wanted to share just some other more creative ideas about how to practice this devotion. Okay, so that brings us to this next one. You might have heard the word japa. Anybody heard that? That's repetition of a mantra. It might have come to you from Buddhism or something. When you repeat a mantra like love over and over again, that's japa, japa. So we have tat japa, tat artha, bhavanam. Here's bhavanam again. Kind of keeps showing up. Okay, bhav is just an essential quality of a person. And yoga talks about the ability to flux. I kind of think of it like a chameleon, kind of taking on the energy of the group, meeting a person right where they are and connecting in that way. And there's a really cool story about that. We're a crystal, and if you lay that crystal maybe on velvet that's red, it looks red. You lay that crystal on velvet that's orange, it looks orange. You lay it on green, it looks green. It's always a crystal, but it's taking on the bhav of those colors. Okay, and so in community, I think that's a very important concept. What it's talking about here is sound, japa, the repetition of a mantra. The specific biggest mantra in yoga, om. Okay, so you've all heard of om. Om, I mean, it's even in kids' cartoons. You know, it's everywhere. O-M. However, originally, it's A-U-M. Have you ever seen that? O-M is A-U-M. And there's a lot of interesting work that you can read just about the development of that mantra. For example, in this book, Isherwood talks about, okay, so God is the most basic fact of this universe. And if we want to represent God with a sound, we need the most basic sound. And so Om is offered as kind of like the cosmic vibration, the first sound, the word, the original word. And it's considered by many, Om, to be the most ancient word for God. And what really fascinates me about the A-U-M, and we're going to try this in a minute, we're going to make some sound, is how each letter comes from a different part of our throat, mouth, and lips. The A, just take a second and kind of, it's in the back, isn't it? It's in the back of the throat. And then the U sound is oo, and so just try the ooh. That rolls from the back forward. You're using your cheeks and your tongue. So the ah is the springing forward of life, the beginning. The you, the ooh, moving forward is like evolution. There's a life cycle to the sound and to the planet and to all of us. So coming forward, and then the that fades away is sort of the dissolution. So you get the entire life cycle in that one sound, A-U-M. So I'm going to guide you through making that sound in just a minute. I want to discuss pranayama first. So we said that that was breath control. Prana is chi, life force. There are many, many little sutras about pranayama. He doesn't get into the physiology that we know now. We remember the relaxation response, that really popular book that Benson wrote, and how breathing, what I've experienced in working with people over the years is that the breath practice is, I call it the great equalizer. If I'm feeling tired and lethargic and slow, I can do some breathing and it'll bring me to kind of that just right place. The same breath might help the scattered energy, the child bouncing off the walls, come down to that same just right place. So it's like a magic wand and you don't have to think about it too much, you just do it. But Patanjali doesn't talk about that. He doesn't talk about the physiology. He talks about the psychology of the breath, that it's calming, that it helps us bring our awareness internally. It helps us with that sense withdrawal. And what he says about chanting the word Om is that it's pranayama. You breathe in. We speak on exhaled air. So when I did yoga with kids, I had them singing. Because if you're singing, you're breathing, right? You have to breathe out to make sound. So any kind of chanting is a pranayama, okay? So what we're kind of encouraged to do when we're chanting Om is to recognize what it means, which I've shared. It's the most ancient word for God. It's the most basic representation of God through sound. Yeah. And so this one with Tat Bhavanam, you want to remember the deep feeling of what the sound represents. Okay? So let's try for just a second. Change your posture and have both feet on the floor. And if you're able to come away from the back seat, that would be good. You want to kind of get your spine. It's fine to have back support, but here my spine is not aligned, right? So I need to either come away from the back or scoot my hips back, one or the other. Okay, but you want your feet on the floor, so it depends on how tall you are. Okay, so just take a moment. Have your hands palm down. Close your eyes. So we've got the asana. We've got the posture. We're pretty comfortable, yeah? Exhale by blowing the air out across your lips. Breathe in through your nose. Exhale out across your lips. Noticing the breath moving through your body. Use your diaphragm. When you inhale, your belly expands. When you exhale, use your navel to draw it toward the spine. Push that air out. Pranayama. So we're going to make the sound and we're going to tap into that deep feeling of the meaning of what it represents. And we're going to make the ah, ooh, im sound, okay? So I'll guide you in and I'll start. First, you're going to exhale, take a deep breath in, Take another breath in. Breathe in. Three more. And then you notice. You notice your energy, the shift, the feeling of remembering the meaning. So we've talked about thoughts, we've talked about posture, we've talked about breath, we've talked about sound. What about light? Jyoti. Jyoti is the Sanskrit word for light. And Patanjali teaches that through the breathing practices, the veil that covers the inner light is lifted. By getting comfortable in the body, choosing opposite thoughts, and moving the breath through the body, anything that obscures that inner light is diminished. Sounds really simple, doesn't it? So this is why a picture is worth a thousand words, right? Because what this tells us is the light is already there. Always already there. We all know that. But this is ancient philosophy. You don't have to create the light. You don't have to do anything, really. But let the veil lift, right? So there are lots of sutras about surrender. And that's a big component of self-care, too. Letting it be there. Tapping in and saying hello. So that's really one of my favorites. It's like, oh yeah, the inner light. It's there for us all the time. It's available to everyone, universally, the whole entire planet. And it doesn't have to, it doesn't contradict any religion. It fits into all religions, all philosophies. Light is everywhere, right? So then, each little thread, these sutras, I'm beginning to think of it as like the World Wide Web, like you pull on one and it gets you to another one, and then, oh my gosh, and then you back up and he tells us the way to tranquility is to concentrate on the inner light. So all of a sudden we have another object of concentration inside the inner light. So what does that feel like to notice the inner light? Anybody have an experience for that? Like in the body specifically? Where in the body? I see this. It fills up. Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's one great idea about how to breathe when you're in, say you're in a yoga pose and you're stretching. The breath, you can think of it as filling whatever shape your body takes. Just like you pour water into the shape of a vase and it fills it perfectly, your breath does that in each and every yoga pose. You fill the entire body with breath or light. And specifically the heart center is one place where you can bring your awareness, your concentration, and he puts it on the ever-blissful inner light. So that's one way of meditation. Okay. Y'all have any questions so far? So we're down here at the second to last one in the blue. Pramana viparyava vikalpa nidra smritaya. A lot of words there. This one links back to his definition of yoga. Yoga is the stilling of the mind. So stilling of the thought patterns, quieting of thoughts. Part of the science here is that Patanjali gives us definitions for everything, and he says, you know what, there's only 5 thought patterns. There are only 5. So you just learn to master each one. And they're all identified here. There are correct thoughts. There are false thoughts. We also have imagination. We have deep sleep as a thought form. And we have memory. And so each of these needs to be mastered in the yoga tradition. So one thing that I want to introduce is this idea of nidra. Nidra means sleep, psychic sleep. And there is a phenomenal yoga practice. I'm actually going to offer it next door on New Year's Day. Yoga Nidra is literally lying down in Shavasana for an hour while I guide relaxation. The other part to that is something called Sankalpa. And a Sankalpa is your personally identified strongest desire. What is it that you would like to see in your life that you would like to arise in the next 6 to 9 months usually? And it could be spiritual, it could be material, there's no judgment. It could be, you know, I've had a couple of surgeries on my feet, and my thing is I am going to hike again. I will hike. And so there's an art to creating the Sankalpa. You want it to be in the present tense. You want to create a feeling of gratitude, like it's already come true. And so I am going to offer a workshop. I have some flyers, and if you're interested, we can talk again later. But what happens with Nidra, okay, deep sleep. Really, it's the dreaming sleep. So we're talking about tapping into the subconscious. And the subconscious is where we hold a lot of our unconscious patterns, a lot of old tendencies, maybe old worn-out beliefs, some of the things, symbols, metaphor, the dream life. It's all in the subconscious. So in Nidra, we calm down the brain waves. Through guided relaxation, we go through the whole thing. We get comfortable in asana, lying down. We do some breathing. We withdraw the senses internally. I guide you through concentration of body parts. And then it's a lying down meditation with imagery, a great deal of imagery, ancient symbols and things like that. And all you have to do is lay there and receive. And at certain strategic points in the practice, I guide you to repeat your Sankalpa. I live in my dream house. I have the perfect job. I am on a cruise. Any of those things, you know. Paul and I had one for years. We are thriving in the beauty of our spiritual community. And this has happened over and over again in our lives, right? So Nidra means psychic sleep. And you have to stay awake. So it really is about being consciously aware of sleep. Kind of like lucid dreaming, right? You kind of notice during the dream that you're dreaming. It's like that. Noticing what's happening in those thought forms during sleep and staying awake for it. And it's a way to release tension, deeply held tension from the subconscious. That you can miss in day-to-day life. It kind of just gets tamped down over and over again, maybe without necessarily releasing some of the root causes. So mastering sleep is one of the keys to tranquility. Isn't that interesting when we think about self-care and how important sleep is and how much we all need that deep, deep rest, right? This last one is also one of my favorites. I had mentioned that yoga really, there's no cookie cutter approach. Almost anyone can do some form of yoga. In my practice as an occupational therapist, the youngest person that I did baby yoga with was 6 weeks old. And in that same time frame, in the same town, my oldest client was 96. And they both were doing yoga therapy with me. So it can be done. Here, there's Swa again. Swajayat. Ishta Devata Samprayoga. Ishta Devata is a key term. And it, if you Google that, you'll get a lot about Ishta Devata. I'll leave this up if anyone wants to take a photo or copy them or whatever. Feel free to do that. The reason that I included this is because Patanjali is very clear that each individual has not only a right, but also a responsibility to find what works for you. That's what Ishta Devata, Devi, means divine or deity. And so we get to choose. We get to choose what it is that we notice when we go inside. It may be light, or it may be Krishna. It may be that your choice is a divine mother. It may be that it's some other Indian deity that you have a predisposition for. But the point being here is that not only do you get to choose, you need to. You need to pick one. And that's where you kind of, you learn that analogy of digging a well. You guys know that one. You go to a spot and you start digging a well and you dig as far as you can, but it's not deep enough, and you go home and you rest, and you come back the next day and you start a brand new hole. And you get deep and you don't hit water, and you go back home and you come again and you start a third hole. No, they're saying stay with the same one until you hit water. And you get to choose. So finding what works for you. Literal translation of this is reflection brings communion with one's chosen deity. So we're back to that idea of yoga meaning union and connection. Okay. That is the end of what I had planned. We still have a few minutes. I also want to play. I have a little instrument over there. I wanted to spend like just 3 minutes or so playing that for you guys. It's a meditative instrument called a tambora, body tambora. But I wonder if there's any questions or comments or any thoughts that came up with any of these.
I just want to go on.
Yes.
And that's, I want to say it without being offensive. I mean, not you, but... Oh, I suppose I could be, but...
No.
The Spiritual Light Center... The thing we honor is all paths to God. And I think that it's just so central. And yet, there's one caveat, one thing that we can trip up on with that. And that's we can become so scattered into so many multiple different things. And I'd say, well, some what would be your go-to religion? What would be your go-to path or practice? Oh, I don't have any. I practice all. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes so scattered, there's really nothing. And we're digging so many holes mm-hmm. that we've never found water. And we mm-hmm. just keep digging them. Mm-hmm. And I remember that the Dalai Lama made it real clear. He says, you know, to honor all religions is basic. He said, but pick something that is yours.
Same.
Give yourself a path.
Same thing.
And quite honestly, I think that's one of our biggest things that we trip over here, is we keep digging lots and lots of different holes, and there is no path that we follow. Mm-hmm. So that would be my encouragement to everyone, is to find what works and follow it.
Find
and
what
honor
works.
All the rest and draw from them.
The only thing I would add to that is that, in my point of view, it does not have to be a practice. It can be a walk in the woods. Mm-hmm. Because I know many, many people who connect in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And that as long as you find a place for that connection, and a lot of times for me, it's right in this building.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the reason we have gravitated here, is because mm-hmm. of the community and the feeling and the connection. I mean, not only do I feel connected to each one of you, but I also feel connected to the light here, because there isn't a person here who doesn't have a deep belief in the light within them.
Mm-hmm.
And so although I'll go to the sweat lodge,
right.
One place where, but I think that what I'm seeing in some of the younger people is what appears scattered is not scattered, but more natural.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because commentaries on Ishta Devata include nature.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, that is included. The walk in the woods is part of it. The sun, the moon. Mm-hmm. Corey.
Could you maybe give us a little insight on exactly what the light is within? Like, you know, when you said your breathing exercise and this light, the darkness is removed. Is this like a physical light, a light of knowledge, a light of spirit? I mean, exactly. What kind of light?
So in my experience, it's a spiritual light that manifests physically. I think that light is source. So I think it refers to source energy. I think you could find other translations of that. There are people who talk about the electrical impulses in the body and how many of them are present in that heart center, and that that's a very real physiological light that's keeping our heart running. Yeah, anybody, and I would love, this is a perfect thing to kind of lob around the room.
Would that also be a base source of, say, elemental, fire, water, air?
Elementals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm fascinated, and I kind of want to pick up, I don't know if it's quantum physics for dummies, or there's something like that out there. I am really fascinated about light and sound, you know, because light is a particle and a wave, you know, and what came first, because there's the word and there's light. And I once had a very deep, we had a couple weeks ago a talk about angels and what are the angels for you, and I had a really deep experience snorkeling with turtles in the Caribbean, and there's that light that was blue in the water, and I was just enveloped by unconditional love, like there was nothing else but love, and I got a thought form. And I believed it. I think it was a correct one. And the message was, light organizes itself into form. Light organizes itself into form. So for me, there's an intelligence there. It's a source that does become physical. Mm-hmm. One other physiological piece that I just wanted to include is that when we breathe properly with an erect posture, not rigid, you want your natural, there are autonomic nervous system lobes around the lower lungs which get us out of fight, flight, or fright. Y'all know sympathetic, go, 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 run, 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 hurry, hurry, hurry. The opposite of that, there are a whole lot around this solar plexus. And so when you breathe with the diaphragm and you massage that solar plexus, you really are getting into parasympathetic, which is rest, digest, heal, integrate, not sleep. Psychic sleep, okay? So I just kind of wanted to throw that in, that connection of like ethereal light with a physical body. I think that's, it's a paradox, right? That really comes true. And then the elements, we are the elements, aren't we? We are water. We are wood.
What are some of the forms of yoga when you have all these different forms shown in the real world of hot yoga and prana yoga and this yoga? What do you feel is the best form of yoga?
Oh, what a great question. That depends on the person's age, stage of life. You may have heard of Iyengar yoga. And the answer is, it depends. Younger people probably need a little more active, a little more movement before they can sit in stillness. People who are older, people who have pain, people who are in any kind of recovery from anything are probably going to benefit more from more props, more support underneath them. And that has been, I mean, if you want to know my favorite thing, it is not hot yoga. I started with hot yoga when I was 22 years old in southern Louisiana in July in a room that was 105 degrees. Okay, I did that throughout my whole 20s. And after a while, yoga started hurting me. I had this pain right here all the time that would not go away. And I wound up doing more what's called restorative and Swarupa, which is you get props, you get blankets, bolsters, blocks, straps. You still do all the variations of forward fold and twist and side bend and backward bend, but you're on a support every single time so that the posture is comfortable. Yes, you're welcome. I would really like to share this. Are we okay on time? I know we're going just a little bit over.
Does anybody need to get home?
3 minutes with this. I want to introduce this. Indian music contains what's called a drone, a background sound, and traditionally there is an instrument called the tambura, T-A-M-B-U-R-A, tambura. It was made with a gourd, big gourd with a long neck. This is a body tambura that I found. It's made by hand, wood out of the Black Forest in Germany. And in Europe, they are doing studies with patients who are under hospice care, who have either chronic pain or anxiety or both. And they put this at a concave back, and so the patient has it on his or her lap. I'm going to play it for you. And with 10 minutes of playing, the research has shown pain and anxiety disappear with these patients. They make tables like this, and you can lay an infant on it and play it from underneath. They make chairs you can sit in and lean against and feel the vibration. So it might look fragile. It's not really. I'm going to play it, and I'm going to leave it out. And you guys are welcome to come and sit with it, touch it, do whatever you would like to do. So he calls it the body tambura. Okay, so I'm just going to let you, it's a drone, there's not really a melody, but as I play it, you're going to hear kind of some of the ethereal sounds. Okay.
Thank you.
32 strings, I believe. I shared this with a toddler with autism, and I didn't know what she would do. I played it, and she came up, and she played it, and she went. Anybody can play it. So you're welcome to.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Something to explore is there is a sound, an herb, a tree, a color, a body position, and a gemstone that all vibrate at exactly the same frequency. Mm. So you just have to match them up.
Match them up.
Thank you. Let me de-hook you.
De-hook me, man.
Yeah, and then we got you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.